Welcome to Ear Biscuits. I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link. Joining us today at the round table of dim lighting are us's. Ourselves.
That's right.
Just the two of us.
Yeah, this is a very, very special Ear Biscuits. This is, don't know if we gave you much warning, but this is the season two Ear Biscuits finale.
Grand finale. I'm excited about this conversation. Don't know how long it's going to go. I think a lot of things are going to surface here amongst us and for you. There's an interesting take on this thing. But yeah, before we get into it, I'll say we're taking a break from Ear Biscuits in order to focus on some other creative endeavors. And trust me, it's going to be worth it.
Oh yes, we have every intention to develop more entertaining things for not only your ears, but your eyes and your ears together, and your souls.
So, with Good Mythical Morning continue to roll on, we needed to create a buffer, creative buffer to focus on perhaps some narrative content.
What? No, you didn't say that, Link.
So enjoy this grand finale of season two of Ear Biscuits. Hang in with us. Now, the concept for this Ear Biscuit was not only our idea, but it was a surprise
was
to
a
us
surprise.
That it was happening. Yeah. I guess this was Stevie's brainchild.
As far as I can tell, this was Stevie's idea to have previous guests of Ear Biscuits come on and grill us with some questions, because we've been asking a lot of questions to a lot of people over the past two seasons of Ear Biscuits. So you heard it right here. This is going to be all questions from previous Ear Biscuits guests for us.
And I have the audio recordings of their questions. So it's as if they walk into the room, sit down at the round table of dim lighting, ask their question, and then politely excuse themselves while we answer the question. And
Just to clarify, we do not have all of these people here
silently waiting to ask the question.
That would be weird. It's very difficult to get that many people into the same place at the same time. I mean, sometimes they do it for like those weird like promos, you know, like for the WB, and they'll like, back in like 1993, they'd like have like Steve Harvey and some other people all together in one place, like in the commercial break. That's not the kind of thing that's happening tonight. It's going to be recordings.
Yeah, and I've got them here on my computer, so I'll just play them and we can listen to them and then we can answer the question.
Are you ready to get started?
It's like we're being grilled here, and basically everyone who submitted an audio question, we're gonna answer. You know, we're gonna give them a turn. But yeah, I guess we should get started here. So let's start with.
Why wait?
I hope you can hear me okay. I'm in a strip mall in Des Moines, Iowa. This is Nice Peter, and I'd like to know honestly how much time each of you spend on your beautiful hair on an average day.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, that's
Nice Peter.
That's a good one to get started.
Yeah, Epic Rap Battles of History on tour.
In
Des Moines, Iowa, I guess. So this is the question he wanted to ask us. How much time do you spend on your beautiful hair on an average day, Rhett?
Well, I will start by saying that we did do a whole sponsored series about how I could style my hair in seconds.
That's true.
That is not actually how I do it. I mean, I don't do it in seconds, but I do believe
it takes minutes.
That it is definitely minutes. I'm going to give my honest assessment is I get out of the shower, so I start with the wet hair. I put some product in. I blow dry while the product is in, and then I reapply more product so it'll be kind of dry.
You blow dry your hair?
I have to, because if I don't, I'll look like my hair is wet given the product that I put in my hair.
I don't recall ever, like in all the years we've shared a hotel room,
the blow drying of my hair is a last 24 to 36 months phenomenon, and you can see a definitive difference in the way my hair looked like when we were shooting Commercial Kings. Like, we were watching an old clip today. Like, it was kind of like wet looking all the time.
Yeah.
My hair isn't wet looking anymore because of that, but the total time, honestly.
But you have to check a bit of pride at the door when you pull out a blow dryer.
Oh yeah, in fact, my wife and I, just moved into a new place, and we have a bathroom that actually has drawers. This is in two sinks. The first time we've ever had two sinks.
Congratulations. And you've arrived.
There is a drawer in between the two sinks that's sort of equidistant from each sink. And I put the hair dryer in there because I was like, baby, we both use it equally.
Oh, you don't have a Rhett dryer and a
but
Jesse
I'm
dryer?
I'm thinking about getting one because hers is purple with a...
Hers? You mean ours?
Our hair dryer is purple. I need like a black hair dryer with like silver trim. Anyway,
it needs
total...
to be super heat. It needs to hurt you when it blow dries your hair, so you like feel manly.
It needs to
sear your forehead.
Well, I check my pride at the door about my hair. You all know that I don't enjoy having this hair. I'm kind of a victim of my hair at this point. But total time, 7 minutes.
Are you kidding me? Okay, for me it's 90 seconds, but I'm thinking maybe I should blow dry because my hair looks wet all the time. There's no way
it takes 90. I've seen you get on your forehead and the hair that's on the forehead. I've seen you wiggle that hair around for 90 seconds. There's no way that the whole process takes 90 seconds.
I'll time it after this. Nice, Peter. Thanks for bringing this up.
I am a great estimator of time. I say 7 minutes a day.
Gosh. All right. So I'm no more than 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
It's wet. I dry it with a towel. I spray this spray on it, and then I fix it with my hands.
Okay.
And that's it. And I think silently to myself about how I'm glad I'm not using a blow dryer and how awesome that makes
me. Well, maybe you should. So you just towel dry your hair? That's what you do?
Towel dry, yeah. Yeah. Towel dry.
Well, I do that, but then I blow dry.
Let's take another question. Now, guys, they get deeper. We get into some good stuff, but I just thought that was a fun one to start with. Here is a second one.
Hey, Rhett and Link, this is Colleen Ballinger, and I have a question for you. I was wondering what your most embarrassing moment is. I need to know.
We've talked about our embarrassing moments.
Well, that's the difficult thing with having been on the internet for so long and told so many personal stories that we've answered this question on Good Mythical Morning in an episode each called Link's Most Embarrassing Moment. That was yours. And then mine is called Rhett's Most Embarrassing Moment.
Well, it was actually Good Morning Chia Lincoln.
Yeah, Good Morning Chia Lincoln, pre-GMM.
And it's funny because I watched it back to make sure I told the story that I still think is my most embarrassing moment, and I haven't topped it since telling that story. So,
yeah.
You know, I'll recap the same one. Do you have a newer embarrassing moment story, or are you
no.
going to? Well, just recap. I mean, everyone hasn't seen that.
Mine is also not as embarrassing as yours, so let me start with mine.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, mine, which I will tell the truncated version of right now, is when we were on vacation, not vacation, we were traveling, and our families were in Kentucky together, and we had our kids at the time. I think we had two total kids between the two families, so we were all in one van that we were renting. We took a break, went into a gas station. I went to the bathroom, then I came back out and started to get into the van. You were driving the van at the time, and you had locked the door, so I began to pull on the door and thinking that you're playing a prank on me and won't let me get in the door, or didn't realize that I was trying to get in the door, I said, open the door. Uh-huh. Can't really see into the car because it was tinted windows and there was kind of a reflection. And I said, open the door. And I started to yell it because I wasn't in the mood to play around or to joke around at the time.
Uh-huh.
As I'm getting louder and louder and yelling, open the door now. I look through the window, and finally the person on the other side of that window in the on the driver's side across the car comes into focus, and it is a woman with her children. And she sees this large man demanding to get into her car. And the look on her face was, I am going to die today. And that was when I realized, wrong van, same color, same model.
Perfect,
wrong van.
Perfect stranger.
Your van that you were actually driving that I was supposed to be riding in was just like two vans down.
So I remember.
Sheepishly
I wish
went to
I would
the actual van.
Been able to look over and see that happen. I don't remember that. I must have been looking the other way or something. Oh, man.
So that was pretty embarrassing.
But there wasn't like a debrief conversation with the woman. Like, roll your window down. Roll your window down so I can tell you.
No, I didn't follow
why?
Up.
Why? I was yelling at you.
Didn't follow up.
Didn't follow up. I didn't follow up with what happened with mine either. In college, there was a summer where me and Matt Newkirk got into working out. And if you really get into working out in college, you work out, and then we would actually swim in the pool as like a as part of like a cool down. And then we would you'd go into the locker room, you'd take a shower.
Yeah.
And we're adults here. This is college. You don't let's not be too sheepish here. You just get buck naked and you take a shower.
Right.
This is not a big deal. Don't worry about it.
Everybody does it.
Everybody does it. But I wasn't that comfortable with it. So the moment I got out of the shower, I was like putting a towel around and everything and like walking back over to where the lockers were so I could put my clothes back on. And I had this system where I would strategically at the last second take the towel off, bend over, put on my underwear and put on my shorts really quick because I just didn't like being naked with all these guys walking around in the locker room. I just wasn't comfortable doing that.
Yeah, normal.
So I was doing my system, and this is in Good Morning Cheerleading, and when we came up with the phrase, the moment of nakedness must be minimized
right.
because of my system. Well, I drop my towel, and as I bend over to get my underwear and put them on, I feel the sensation of my butt cheeks being pressed against something. I was like, there's no wall here. behind me, and then I start to realize that it's like a cold, clammy thing that I'm pushing up against.
Like a whale?
And then I turn.
Or a dolphin?
I turn around and look, and there is a large, shirtless man sitting on a bench right behind me, and I have planted my butt cheeks square into the dude's back, like smushed him into
it. A professor, no doubt.
I think he was a professor. Yeah, and it was just, it was one of those horrifying, embarrassing moments where time slows down to a crawl, and, you know, it just felt like it took a minute to, like, pry my butt cheeks off of this guy's
back. It probably didn't.
Back.
And did you speak to him?
I was looking, and then he turned, and our eyes met. Mm. And then I just whipped
your eyes met right after your butt and his back met.
Yeah. And then I whipped my head back around really quick, pulled up my underwear, pulled up my pants, gathered all my stuff, and ran around the corner to the other lockers. And
oh,
like
you ran away.
Cowered.
Yeah.
Just in embarrassment.
I did the right thing.
Put on all my clothes. And then as I walk out, I like see the guy again. And I like.
You gave him a nod?
I nodded.
Yeah, man. That was me. Nice to get to know you.
That was so embarrassing. I mean. But he had the grace not to say anything or not to get up.
It wasn't public embarrassment, which is but neither one of those experiences were really big public embarrassment. So I'm grateful for that.
All right, there's actually a second half to Colleen's question here. Let's play that.
Hey guys, it's me Miranda, and I have a really good question for you. I was wondering who is your favorite YouTuber, and you better say me, or else I'll be really ticked off. And I was also wondering, what is your favorite kind of juice? I just wanted to know because I'm trying out new different kinds of juices. I'm a new juice connoisseur. So.
That wasn't us that burped. I just want to clarify. That was
Miranda.
That was Miranda who burped and then breathed on the other side of it.
Who's your favorite YouTuber?
Miranda, I'll say, okay, easily you're my favorite YouTuber.
Okay, I would say besides Miranda, in an effort to not alienate any actual YouTubers out
AKA
there.
AKA friends, probably.
I'm going to go with a channel that I believe is my favorite channel.
Okay.
And that's Bad Lip Reading.
I knew you were going to say that.
I have to agree. I never am disappointed in a video on that channel. You know, it's so much work. I know that they can only do so many, but there's very few YouTube channels that I'm just like, if there's a new video there, I am guaranteed without fail to be entertained at the highest level.
Bad Lip Reading. I don't put off watching any of those. Like, I haven't watched any of the Twilight stuff, and I was like, it almost made me want to watch the Twilight movies. After watching,
it's better just to watch the Bad Lip Readings.
So yeah, I'm gonna go with that. What about juice?
Well, my favorite kind of juice. I don't know if this counts, but we've got this refrigerator in our office that, like a
secret fridge,
our own fridge in our office, and we have stocked that thing with some kombucha This is very Southern California. I'm just going to go ahead and admit that.
Yeah.
We've got some kombucha in there that's like a fermented tea, but there's a specific type of kombucha that has chia seeds. This is like double Southern California. So just, you know, excuse that. But it's chock full of chia seeds.
Chia juice, man. That's my answer too.
But there's not juice in the chia. I mean,
but
it's
the juice.
Kombucha, which is not technically a juice, but it is in the juice family, and it is my favorite juice, and I love that stuff.
I love it too. If you look at our secret fridge, that's the only thing in there. Well, there's some of that yerba mate stuff.
That's good too. Nice Peter actually introduced us to that on the set of ERB. But the kombucha was something our wives got us into. And then I discovered the chia because I was putting the chia in the smoothies. And then I realized there was the chia inside of the kombucha. And now we only do chia kombucha exclusively.
And chia gets like, it has that snotty consistency.
Gelatinous.
I mean, it's
great.
I love that slimy,
it's like, you know,
snottiness.
50% of your daily requirement of fiber in a drink, in a juice.
Well, you know I need that. I wonder what Miranda's favorite juice is now that she's getting.
Well, she's asking us what she needs to be drinking. That's it.
All right, let's tee up Grace's question here. The only double guest so far on here, Biscuits.
Hello, Rhett and Link. This is Grace Ann Helbig the First. Here is my question for you guys. I think one of the hardest but most beneficial things that we can do as human beings is reflect on times that we've felt like failures. I would be very curious to know at what time or times in each of your lives you felt like a failure and why and how that has maybe helped shape the people that you are or given you some sort of perspective, so on and so forth. Okay, that's it. Yep, that's it. That's it, okay, bye.
Okay, bye. All right, bye. Oh, she's going for the jugular.
Well, I mean, she's getting a little more personal. A little more personal.
Failures. You want to go on this?
We've never failed. No, I think it's, I think the difficulty is thinking about which thing to talk about because there's a lot of things that we've done individually and collectively that haven't turned out the way that we would have liked them to.
I think there was a definitive moment that comes to my mind with Commercial Kings, the TV show that we had on IFC. When it wasn't renewed. So they ordered 10 episodes and we made all of them. It wasn't like Online Nation where it was like we were hired to host some show and then it was like canceled. The show wasn't canceled, but so it wasn't really a failure in that sense. But then they had to make a decision to renew it or not. And so everything was focused on one particular decision and an answer, like a yes or a no. This is coming back. And it actually took a long time after season one ended, they didn't make a decision. They kind of strung it out there.
For months,
but then there was a point where the answer finally was no. You know, it was that an email or a phone call? I think it was strung out so far that it actually just turned out to be an email.
I honestly can't remember the specific moment, but I think
It was an email or phone call.
I think there was a time at which we were like, well, if it was going to get renewed, we would already know.
Well, that's what we told ourselves, but I mean, I think it that was a because there was a definitive answer and it came, it did feel like a failure. I mean, now
well, it definitely felt like a failure because it was like, okay, you know, it's interesting. We've never told anybody this, but and I don't know if we were together at the time, I'm pretty sure. What was it? What was it Joe Penna's wedding that Ray William Johnson was at? Where was it that this is the first time we ever met Ray William Johnson back in the day? And he came up to us and we had just moved out here to make Commercial Kings and he basically said like, we're all counting on you for this thing to be a success. Like you guys are going to be the first people to show that
I remember that
YouTubers can cross over or whatever. You know, it was the first interaction I ever had with a guy. There was this sense of, all right, this has got to work because people are watching.
And that's added pressure. But I mean, there's just the fact that, hey, we're dropping everything. We're moving to another coast. This is what we're doing. This is going to be our life right now. And we're dragging our families out here and we're making this, well, not dragging them, but we're moving our families out here. We're making this thing happen.
They came willingly.
And when there's that point of the answer is no, yeah, it felt like a failure. And now in retrospect, certainly, I mean, after that is when we, in the aftermath of that, we had to figure out what we were going to do. We started Good Mythical Morning. I mean, I'm very, very thankful that it happened the way that it happened. But I don't want to gloss over the fact that there was more than a moment where it just felt like, well, that was a big thing. We put everything into that. It didn't work. Now what are we going to do? And the answer was we're going to rebuild our YouTube channel. But by the way, we're also going to write a TV pilot. We're going to start having meetings for television, something that we never talk about because it never amounted to anything.
Yeah.
I'm not calling that a failure, but it didn't work out either. But it's those conversations that you have to have when you have to tell everybody. You have to tell your friends. You have to tell your fans. You have to tell your audience. You have to tell your family members. You have to tell your mom, the show, they didn't order it again. And so I developed this speech that I would say. And you know what? There's still times that I say it now.
I say it all the time. I mean,
so you know what I'm about to say. What's the speech?
Well, I mean
the explanation, right?
Well, I'm just saying the fact that the show got canceled, it's always how I explain why we live out here, because people are like, "What brought you to LA?" And I'm like, "Well, I make internet videos, and then one of the things I was doing on the internet got turned into a television show. It got canceled after one season. But now I'm doing the internet thing full time and it's great." So it's like, there's actually failure built into the story of why I live here.
And I'll even throw in things, and early on it was there more. It was kind of like taking the edge off the fact that it didn't work, which was all true, which was, well, you know, IFC was, they were trying to figure out if they wanted to get into more narrative, and our show wasn't narrative. They said it was good. We were very proud of it. It was a great experience, but they wanted to do other things on their channel, so they made the decision not to order more of them. You know, so you kind of give the explanation, take the edge off. It wasn't us, it was them.
But the fact is that, you know, this many years later, looking at it, I think we both know how we would do things differently. And I'm not saying it would have by any means guaranteed that the show would have continued, and I think we're all on the same page that ultimately, it's been great that it didn't get picked up. We wouldn't be here right now without it.
So to Grace's question, how has that experience shaped us as people, do you think?
I mean, I think I go into everything that we do with an overwhelming sense that there's absolutely no guarantee that it's going to be a success. But more and more with every year that passes, I'm compelled to trust us before we trust anybody else's voice. You know, because I think that a lot of the things that we would change about Commercial Kings are things that we just didn't feel confident enough to say or to implement, you know, even though we probably had the ability to as executive producers of the show.
I don't think it would have, like, made it have a second season.
I don't think it would have made it have a second season, but there's just this, like, you know what? There's no guarantees that anything is going to work. And the best chance that you can give it is by trusting yourself and doing everything you can to execute your vision. So I kind of approach every single thing that we do. And I also approach everything if this doesn't work, I've learned that it's always a step to something else. So I can't get too torn up if something doesn't work.
Yeah, because we moved on to things which I'm so thankful that they're better for us and we're enjoying ourselves and expressing ourselves more.
That's happened every single time,
yeah, with Online Nation and with, you know, there's lots of times.
Every failure has opened a door to something that we've actually wanted more than the thing that we were trying to succeed at.
I mean, I think on a much more microscopic scale, I'm sure you'd agree with this. Maybe I'm making this overdramatic, but just in terms of feeling like a failure, it's easy to feel like a failure as a father or a husband sometimes. I think that those are the things that happen.
Well, I'm a perfect father and husband.
more often, because when you have kids, you know, it's a demanding thing to have patience. And I don't have a lot of that for younger human beings. And like, I gotta apologize a good amount to my children. which I think is a healthy thing. You know, I think that's my spin at least. Hey,
I'm sorry, Father.
Well, but I don't want to just dive too deep into all the failures. We should just move on.
Okay.
Unless you want to talk about some more failures.
No, let's move on to a question from Mamrie Hart.
Good question, Grace. Here we go with the main town.
My first question is, being a fellow North Carolinian, sometimes I think how easy it would be to go back to North Carolina and be able to make YouTube videos from there, which you guys could do. So what is it that keeps you in Los Angeles rather than doing what y'all do back in the Tar Heel State? Yes, I did say Tar Heel. I know you guys did not go to Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And my second question is something I always ask people, which is, what's the first inanimate object you ever dry humped? Cheers.
She always asks people that.
She's never asked me that.
Well, I can believe that.
She sounds like she's on a phonograph. Like when
like we're playing a record.
Well, like when sound, when you know, we were able to first translate human sounds into instruments. You know, like
one of those big horns.
1878 or whatever that was.
Like a record player with a big horn on it.
That thing.
Oh, okay, I guess.
I think it's called a phonograph. I don't know. Maybe I'm just making things up.
Do we think about going back to North Carolina and doing this? We could do this from North Carolina. It seems like that's what she thinks sometimes. So.
I think there's a number of parts to this. I think number one, we love Los Angeles. So there's a lot of people who hate Los Angeles. I recognize that, and they're like homesick. I think something about our personalities, wanting to kind of be in the middle of things, we haven't grown tired of Los Angeles yet.
Mm-mm.
So we like it here. So that's just kind of to start off with.
Well, and I don't mean to say anything about the weather, which is hackneyed. But I will say that I've never used that word since I learned it in vocabulary class.
I don't even know what it means.
Sixth grade, and I probably misused it.
I thought it was like when something's wrong with your knee. I'm hackneyed.
But it's 74 degrees outside right now at like 9:30 at night, and it's probably that cool in here, and because we're not outside. And I'm wearing a t-shirt, a hoodie, a jacket, and a hat. And I thought about putting a hoodie over my head. I mean,
yeah.
But
we've changed.
That being said, you know, I just went back to North Carolina and visited family, and it was great. And I miss all of them, and it's tough to be away from family and friends back home. But I love being here. I just love being in a place where so many people are trying to do, they're doing artistic stuff, or they're related in this business in some way, and you never have to explain.
And you know, it's not that people who are trying to do interesting and artistic stuff are not elsewhere, are not in North Carolina. No, there's a lot of people doing interesting and artistic stuff in North Carolina.
Yeah.
But there's something about a place like New York City or a place like Los Angeles where people who are shooting as high and as far as they possibly can in the arts migrate to these places. Not exclusively, but most or at least many of them do kind of migrate to these areas. And what that ends up creating is just a really interesting community of people that not only can you interact with just on a personal level, but I think I'm going to take issue with what she said. I think it would be easy to go back and make the videos that we're doing in North Carolina. I don't think it would be easy because, you know what? Stevie is from North Carolina. And what did she do? She moved to Los Angeles, and we hired her when she was out here in Los Angeles.
Yeah,
as an example, everyone on our team. Yeah.
You know, I love our team and everybody that works with us. And it would have been a lot more difficult to gather these people together back in Lillington, you know, or in Fuquay.
Right.
I mean, that's just the fact of the matter.
It's the nature of things.
Now, when we shot the opening to Commercial Kings in the middle of the street in downtown Fuquay Varina, a block from where our studio was, like literally in the center turn lane, while people were driving on either side of the road, we had a tripod and like a jib set up for that shot. You can't do that out here without spending a lot of money and getting a lot of cops to show up and signing a lot of papers and then spending even more money. As we were, you remember this, when we were shooting that, we looked over there.
The cops did show up.
We didn't ask any permission, and then we walk over to the cop, Fuquay cop, who shows up. It was like, okay, we got to apologize and plea our case before we could get.
Because we're in the turn lane, basically.
Yeah.
Before we, not on a median, in the road.
Yeah. For 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to get the shot we wanted without permission. So we go over to him and we're like preparing our statement. And before we can get in a word in edgewise, he says, hey guys, my son's a big fan. How long are you guys gonna be here? Like he wanted his son to come out and meet us, which is great. And then there was like a county commissioner who
the town commissioner. He rolled down the window and he's like, hey guys, I'm the town commissioner. Anything you guys need, just let me know.
So there's,
let's ignore the fact that you're creating a traffic hazard at the moment. So that, there's something about home, there's something about North Carolina, there's something about the South that you can't recreate out here. I acknowledge that, there's a lot of different elements about the people that we grew up with and the place we grew up that you can't recreate out here in Los Angeles. But you know, I spent over 30 years there. So did you. And it's like, okay, well, this is a new season. And I'm not saying that we're going to eventually get tired of smog and traffic and shallow people. But I do think that at least for the indefinite future, we're in a place where we feel like we're able to do what we do to the best of our ability because of where we're at.
Yeah. And I will say a mattress.
Oh yeah, second part of the question. I'll say a stuffed Shamu from SeaWorld.
Here's another question.
Hey guys, this is Josh Sunquist. My question is, a lot of times people talk about how having kids changes everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if when you look at your videos now versus before having kids, if you see any difference in the content that you produce.
Very calming voice. I feel like he's leading me in a mindful meditation as he asks the question.
Which he does on his second channel.
Right.
So you can check those out if you want some guided mindful meditation from Josh Sunquist, which we didn't talk with him about on the Ear Biscuit. So that's a little shout out.
Having kids changes everything. Well, that's true. But specifically with the question of, our videos now versus before having kids, we had kids before we started making videos. I mean, before we started making videos as we do now.
Yeah,
professionally on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, the first breakout video as many of you probably know is when we did Pimp My Stroller, where your son Locke and my daughter Lily were in the double stroller that we pimped out and turned into like something that kind of looked like the Batmobile with ground effects and spinners. We have made a few videos. In college, we had made some videos, but none that like translated and broke out on YouTube once YouTube became a thing. And we were writing more funny songs much more than we were making videos. So that doesn't really.
I think it's more about since there is no before and after. There's really this is the situation. We have children; they watch our videos. How does that make a difference in the content we produce?
Hmm.
I would say that we have not yet made a video. I'm not saying that like we're about to make something different, but we haven't made a video that I don't let my kids watch.
Yeah, And we think about that a lot. Like I think about my kids watching our videos and I want them to be able to watch our videos. I mean, we certainly have friends in the industry who their kids can't see the stuff that they make because it's comedy for an older audience or whatever.
Well, and everybody has a different standard too, because I would say that, a couple times a year we'll release something, whether it's an episode of Good Mythical Morning or whether it's a certain guest we might have on Good Mythical Morning, or whether it's a music video that takes things in a certain direction, where people who have a different standard for what they allow their kids to watch will complain. This usually happens on Facebook. It seems that the most vocal crowd when it comes to the particular standards that they think our videos should be up to kind of find their voice on Facebook. And for every person who has said, I can't believe that you guys did that or said that, I'm not gonna let my kids watch anymore, I've always honestly thought, well, I let my kids watch it. I mean, I wouldn't have made it if I wouldn't let my kids watch it.
Right.
And
there's an upcoming sketch that we're going to release on our channel the camping sketch is there's like implied nudity.
Well,
from me, and it's like I'm gonna let my kids watch that, but they're gonna.
Well, you have to. I mean, implied nudity means that we know that you're naked, but you don't see that you're naked. I mean, I'm technically naked. There's implied nudity under my underwear right now. I mean, I don't.
What? I mean, yeah. What kind of rationalization is
I'm
that? What
saying
are you
saying? Any nakedness that is in the video is covered up. So therefore, it's the same as having pants on.
Right. Well, if the pants were a blur, digital blur.
What's the difference between jeans and blur? Really, if you think about it.
Well, this is a conversation I'm going to be having with my kids when the video comes out.
But I will say, because...
Because they're going to watch it, and they're going to be a little embarrassed, but they're going to laugh.
They're going to
laugh. And we're going to think it's ridiculous, and it's fine.
Yeah.
And, for me.
I mean, I'm not... And again, I mean, I'm not... You know, obviously the majority of the stuff that we create is family friendly, regardless of what your standard is. But there are people who are super sensitive about a lot of things, and we're not here to please those people, and we're going to disappoint those people from time to time, and that's just part of the deal.
There is a standard of I want my kids to watch what I do.
Right, but our kids are getting older.
They're getting older.
So what if when our kids are like 18, is it going to get R-rated at that point?
Yeah. I don't know.
No, it's not. I doubt it.
But we're not making stuff for preschoolers.
No, we're not. It's
and
not.
There have been people who've thought that.
It's not for kids, but kids can watch it. That's what we always say. However, Ear Biscuits in particular is definitely not for kids. And when there's an episode that we think is definitely not for kids, we let people know. So I think it depends on the property.
Speaking of kids.
My kids don't listen to Ear Biscuits. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. The only Ear Biscuit that any of my kids listened to was Stampy Cat, who submitted a question for us here.
Oh, that's a great
by
segue.
Way of segue.
Hello, Rhett and Link. This is Stampy, and my question is, because you create most of your content as a partnership, what is the best and worst thing about making videos with someone else compared to making them by yourself?
That voice is absolutely amazing. There's absolutely no reason to doubt why he has made himself famous. It's that voice. If you could talk like that, we'd be twice as big.
So what's the best and worst thing about making content together versus making it by yourself? I mean, so we'll answer that. And you know, I'll start by saying we've never made anything apart, really. I mean, you made a couple of videos for Jesse. Like there
you're going there?
We don't have to talk about those. I don't even know what
you're talking about.
I think you made a video for Jesse and it's like, I didn't help you make it. It was like an anniversary video. I don't know if it was just a picture montage.
Oh yeah, I mean, I've written some songs and stuff. I wrote her a song back in the early marriage when I was really romantic.
Were you blowing your hair?
blow drying would be a...
Were you trying
to go R-rated already just because I mentioned it, huh? I was not blow drying my hair in the video or in the song that I wrote for it.
While okay, I'm sorry.
But the only all of our creative endeavors have been done together. It's like the only thing that we've ever done kind of on our own is just the jobs that we did before we had creative jobs.
Okay, but
I have an answer to the best worst thing about making content. I think the best thing and the worst thing are the same thing, and that is you have to take somebody else's opinion into account. I mean, it's plain and simple.
You have to get buy-in on anything creative from you if I'm pitching it, vice versa. We both have to be on board.
And that can be one of the most frustrating things if you have an idea that you think is incredible or you have a perspective on something that you're like, no, this is gonna work. And it's just like, if you would just let me do it. But then the best part of that is—
Because you want it to be easy. You just wanna pitch your idea, or I wanna pitch my idea, and then just, there not to be any resistance.
So it's frustrating,
And it's not even actually resistance. It's part of the process, but the problem is when we interpret it as resistance, and it is frustrating.
But what we have found is, although it can be a frustrating process, it does almost always lead to a better product because two minds are better than one.
It's a refining process.
Now, you can get too many cooks in the kitchen, without a doubt. But we're basically the you know, when it comes to the core ideas.
Finish this sentence. If I worked alone, blank.
Well, this kind of gets into almost like an accountability thing, which is,
yeah,
if I worked alone, I would probably have taken some sick days, a lot of sick days. Like when I worked for the engineering firm that I worked for back in the day, if I woke up with the slightest sore throat,
you were out of,
I called in sick. I was like, this isn't worth it. This job is not fun. I feel bad. I'm going to stay home and watch The Price is Right and eat some chicken noodle soup because that's my prerogative. But I haven't seen The Price is Right since we've started this business because—
Drew Carey hosts.
I heard about that. He's lost a lot of weight. He looks very different. He's not funny anymore.
I haven't watched it either.
But the thing is—
Just to keep the accountability intact.
Is there's no sick days. Like, I honestly cannot remember a sick day. We've taken some days off for family. We've taken some days off for vacation. I cannot remember not coming to work in the past 9 years since this business started.
Well, it's interesting.
Because I was sick, and I have been sick a lot. I come to work because I know you're gonna be there. And if I don't come to work, I have to call and be like, I'm not feeling this. We gotta work. I wanna go and like do crafts today.
We've mutually committed to stuff, but still, if there's any time that we do everything absolutely equal. I mean, if you get X amount of dollars, I get X amount of dollars.
Well, that's what you think.
If you're taking this amount of vacation, I'm taking this amount of vacation. If I gotta do this, well, you know, it's funny because sometimes if it's like, hey man, my computer's busted. I need a new one. It's like, we had this conversation today. I'm like, my computer's not working well. I think it's a justified purchase to get a new one. But I'm mentioning this to you because I know that you're gonna— That means you get one too. And I need you to be a little excited about it. And of course, you're gonna be excited because anything that you can get, you're gonna get excited about. But it's the other way. If you were to ask me, there's a chance I may be like, nah, let's wait, man.
Just— Well, you know, and you're kind of getting into some of those issues that I think that Hank Green's question raises too. So we're kind of getting into that. So let's play his question.
Hi, this is Hank Green of Hank and John Green of the Vlog Brothers. I wanted to ask Rhett and Link a question. Hi, guys.
Hi.
There's something super powerful about two people leading a creative project together. You see this a lot, though. It's usually siblings that are doing it, but you guys are pretty close to siblings, often closer than siblings, I'd say. And also, I think it requires a really deep level of trust and understanding to do this kind of thing together. And that is difficult to get outside of actual family relationships. But I'm interested in building that with other people in my life who aren't in my family. So what do you think it is about this kind of relationship that increases the odds of success? And how have you guys cultivated that trust and understanding in your creative and personal and professional relationship? That's my question. Bye, guys.
Good question.
Jeez. Well, you know, the first part of that question of like, you know, what about that kind of relationship increases the odds of success? I think we kind of got into that, which is this two minds are better than one, especially when they work together well and that kind of thing. But this thing about trust, which is, you know, this is something—
And not being siblings, I think is, you know, where he's coming from.
Yeah. Well, and I would say for all intents and purposes, we are, and maybe even, we always describe ourselves as an old married couple. It's probably a better description than two brothers because we made the decision to be friends, and we have continued to make the decision to continue to be friends
and be business partners. And
but the trust thing is, you know, thankfully, and I think this is a key. Trust is something that we've never had to work on. We don't have to work on our trust. The trust is not something that is in jeopardy and never has been in jeopardy. And I think that is just a result of the time and the track record, knowing each other since we were kids, and we had never violated each other's trust. Now we've pissed each other off, yeah. And we're gonna get into talking about that later, but we've never violated each other's trust.
Yeah, I mean, trust is not something that you can engineer. You know, it's interesting that Hank said he's interested in cultivating relationships of trust and collaboration that don't involve being someone's being siblings. Now, I, you know, he's, you know, he's married, and I'm sure he gets the vibe of commitment and, you know, earning trust. So I'm not telling him anything he doesn't already know in that sense. But I mean, that's what our experience is that it's something that we earned over time of not, you know, just not doing something to just really undermine our friendship.
And that's why I get the computer when you get the computer. I mean, that, you know, that's, it's because I'm never, even though I could, you know, I have access to the corporate checking account to the same degree that you do. I could be going to the ATM and pulling out cash and you would never look at it. We don't, you know, but we know that that's not going to happen. And that's, I mean, we couldn't do what we do if a trust was something that was in the balance.
Right. And I think a good example is the principle of adopting the language of we, when we're saying anything outwardly. We made a decision. There was actually, we may have talked about this in Ear Biscuit at one point, but we made a decision at some point where we actually said that we are going to not take personal credit for things. Instead, we are going to refer to, even if there's something that very specifically was just one person, because we divide up more and more creatively all the time, and we know certain things that one of us is doing and the other one's not having much of a hand in it. We have a creative hand in everything that we do. We both touch everything. But if you're doing 90% of something, like a whole bunch of the writing on something, well, we still make a decision that when we talk about that outwardly, it's a, we use we terminology. Right. We made this, when we did this, when we created this, when we wrote this. I think that's just a decision to protect, just to protect against competition and credit.
Well, and ego.
To protect against ego, exactly right. That it's, and to say, hey, you know, this is our agreement. This is an extension of trust that we, you know, there's something more important than one of us getting credit or getting more accolades than the other person. And that's us creating what we want to, seeing a vision.
Well, because I think
come together.
I mean, how many times have you heard about creative partnerships or what people would describe as a creative partnership, and it turns out that the parties in that partnership, one of them or both of them consider themselves to be the key or to be, oh no, I was the one that started this and then I brought you along, or, you know, and those partnerships always end.
Right, and like the Lennon McCartney example, if you look at the credits on every single one of their songs, Lennon McCartney. I mean, they didn't all write all of the songs, and you know.
But then they broke up, right? Or was it that Lennon got shot? I mean, they broke up. I mean,
yeah, they broke up, but I'm talking as the Beatles. But yeah, we could still break up, but then that would be a new agreement. Did I just bust the analogy entirely?
You basically said, well,
no, as the Beatles.
But they went to India and things got weird. Maybe we just got
to. Let's just not go to India.
Don't go to India.
But as the Beatles, and I could be a little wrong about this, but every song, whether one of them wrote it or the other one wrote it, it's credited to both of them, Lennon/McCartney.
And they're both still alive and both still best friends to this day. It would be a perfect analogy if that was the case. So just let's just believe
that's
true.
Let's just say that's the case.
Imagine a world where John Lennon is still living and is Paul McCartney's best friend.
Well, then what about all those Wings songs that are pretty awesome?
You missed my Imagine joke.
I know, I got it, but
oh,
I mean,
you didn't even laugh at it. You didn't appreciate that at all.
Okay.
So, Hank, I hope that helps.
Did we give Hank his due?
Well, I think the application is, if you wanted to build this kind of trust with other people, then it's just going to be, it's time, you know, it's an investment, and there are some choices that you can make.
And there was this commitment. I mean, even the blood oath that we took when was that, you know?
Middle school?
It depends on when we're telling it, when it was.
Early high school.
It's fuzzy at this point. I think it was early high school, but we made a blood oath, and it was a ridiculous thing amongst
two kids.
It was very broad, but it was the fact that we did that and that we talked about it we were very commitment oriented, you know, it was, and then when we moved out here, I mentioned earlier about writing a TV pilot, and when you talk to agents and stuff like that, they're asking you questions like, well, what is it you guys want to do? Do you want to have a network television show? Let's see if we can make something happen. Do you guys want, and they would all ask the question, do you guys want to go out on audition separately? And we made a decision, and we actually had to talk about it again just to kind of renew that vow, so to speak, that no, we're going to be, it's too complicated. We're going to be in everything. We're a duo.
I don't think there was never a serious consideration that we would do things individually.
No. There never was. But when people would ask, we would have to tell them, you know, and we would have to take a stand. It's like, no, I don't want to see any opportunities that's not something for us as a comedic duo. That's for one of us individually.
And not to mention, I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, when we're 70 years old, if you're like, I really want to open up a wood shop or something like that, I don't know if that you're going to want to do that, then I'm going to be like,
I'm not,
you know, well, don't do that without me. But there's so many things that we want to do as a duo that we've yet to do, that any personal creative projects that we want to do, I think they're going to be after we've done everything that we wanted to do together, and there may never be anything else. So,
but I can see that there's a time where there'd be something where, like, I got this little side project, you got this little side project kind of thing.
But you know, not until we do those things that we've got a list, you know, it's a pretty long list of those things that we've always said that we want to do. And we haven't made a lot of progress into that list.
And I think that the things that we want to do, and the way that, I'll just make a prediction here, and it's funny because I thought about this, like, you know, back in middle school, being like thinking about the Fresh Prince and DJ Jazzy Jeff. Okay, this is gonna get a little like geeky.
My kids are watching that show right now.
You know, we were like super into their music, and then Will Smith has this television show. Jazzy Jeff shows up, and he's a horrible actor in the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and then Will Smith becomes this amazing blockbuster actor.
Yeah, he's an actor. That's right.
Played Muhammad Ali, and he was in that Independence movie, and then a lot of other stuff. And then I don't know what he's up to now. There's like Scientology going on, and I'm just scared for the guy.
Yeah, right. But he'll make a comeback.
But Jazzy Jeff just got into producing and his music, and I don't think that will happen to us, because I just don't think we're that much different. We're not as different as those two guys.
Right. Yeah.
And plus, there is this pattern that you have these big ideas, then you convince me how great it is, and then I like double down on it, and then that's kind of a pattern that will probably keep happening.
It works well.
So I think we're pretty safe in saying that, you know.
What about Outkast though? I mean, you know, Big Boy and Andre.
I just think they're more different than we are.
Yeah.
We want to break in here for a quick moment to mention this episode's sponsor, Credit Karma. Rhett, what's the most important number in your life?
My age.
Nope.
My IQ.
Nope.
The level that I park my car on in the mini-leveled parking garage at the outlets.
Nope. I'll give you a hint. It has a huge impact on your finances, what you might pay for your credit card interest, home and auto loans, and student debt. It's your credit score. And it's crucial to know what that score is and how it works.
Well,
people,
I knew you were going to say that because I know that our sponsor is Credit Karma. I was just playing a long link. Hopefully I was convincing.
Excellent.
What I like about Credit Karma is they don't just show you a score and send you away. They actually break it down so you can see how your actions can affect your score. And they do all of this for free.
And then they send you away. No, they don't even send you away. You can just then go away after you get the helpful information. Don't pay for your credit score is the point. With Credit Karma, you can get your credit score right now absolutely free. Just go to creditkarma.com/rhettandlink to get started. You also get free tips and suggestions to help you manage your credit, free credit monitoring, and free alerts when your score changes. There's no catch, people. You don't have to put in your credit card number or anything like that. Everything on their site is free.
That's right. Credit Karma offers reports, scores, and tools all for free. One of the pathways to achieving the good life is to make sure you're on top of your credit score.
Go to creditkarma.com, that's Karma with a K, of course, /Rhett and Link. creditkarma.com/Rhett and Link to get started.
Today's episode is also brought to you by Zevia. Zevia is a naturally sweetened soda with no sugar, no calories, and it's also non-GMO project verified.
What? Zevia is available in 15 delicious flavors, including cream soda, black cherry, cola, ginger ale, orange, and even tonic water, all with zero calories, and all of them are awesome, especially grape.
Well, that's your favorite.
Yeah.
I like the cream soda. Oh. I'm partial to the cream soda. But if you love soda and you don't love the artificial sweeteners and calories that come along with it, then you're going to want to stock up on some Zevia. They're the first brand to offer zero-calorie sodas with no artificial sweeteners and no sugar. And they're also certified vegan, gluten-free, and kosher.
Kosher.
You had to do that.
Stretching it a little bit. Go to Zevia.com/podcast because Zevia is giving away thousands of free six packs, y'all. You never know. You could come home to a surprise soda on your doorstep. You know you like the sound of that. Head to Zevia.com/podcast to get yours. It's Zevia.com/podcast. Now back to the biscuit. Let me play another question here. Who's next? Oh, Hannah. Okay.
Yeah, Hannah Hart.
Rhett, what's your favorite part about working with Link? Link, what's your favorite part about working with Rhett? Rhett and Link, what's your favorite part about working with the impossibly awesome Stevie Wynn Levine? Levine? Stevie. Worth working with Stevie.
I think it's Levine. Okay. Hannah's friends with Stevie, so she got. I guess she was throwing in a shout out there. But I also think the thing that was at work there is Hannah is trying to create some sort of awkwardness in getting us to say sweet things about each other, because that's, I think that's her ploy here.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, I think that, or maybe she's just a curious cat.
But there's an interesting thing, and you were telling me that Jesse told you about this, so maybe you should tell it, about the awkwardness amongst guy friends to even...
Men are not willing to acknowledge that they are friends.
With each other, yeah.
Right.
But there's like, just, there's awkwardness in even saying we're friends. So for us to, on a show, in a dimly lit room, just the two of us to be then disseminated out
later. I don't
later.
Like to think of it as just the two of us. I like to think about the people who are also listening. I picture them being here.
To turn around and say our favorite things about each other. At least she said our favorite things about working with each other. So it's not like, I love the way that your eyebrows dance when you speak or something.
Well, that's not on my list about you. But I've got some things. I think I might have a couple of things, Link. I think I might have more than one thing.
Okay, you'll go first then. But we're not going to make eye contact while you're saying these things.
No, definitely not.
Okay.
I would say, and this may be a little, I mean, this may be me saying something that it because it benefits me and that's why I like it.
You're hedging already.
As opposed to just being a good-hearted guy who's just seeing something in someone.
Okay.
I think I take it for granted. Having someone who, when it comes down to a perspective on something, like a perspective on a person that we meet, for instance, a person that we hang out with, or a situation where we go into a room and we have a meeting with like five people, me and you may differ on our approach to different things a lot, but we almost always have the same exact read on major situations and individual people. So much so that it's kind of like, we already know what we're thinking collectively. We just have to talk to somebody else about it. Does that make sense? Having someone who...
I think like you?
No, I'm saying I take it for granted that one of the things that is, I think this goes back to us being able to work together. And I'm saying I think like you and you think like me. We're very different, but there's this whole large slice of the pie of life that we kind of silently and wordlessly kind of interpret in the same way, that I kind of take it for granted until I like start trying to have a conversation with somebody else. So that's one thing. I'd say the second thing is one of the reasons why we work together so well, which is I don't like to finish things, and I don't like to get into the weeds on things. And I have a tendency, because you've kind of just done this, to be like, it's like once we get into like a really complicated like edit or something like that, I'm just like, I'm just gonna kind of go on autopilot now, because I know that Link is gonna worry about this to the nth degree,
yeah,
and land it. And so, I mean, if we were the same in that way, then it wouldn't work. So the fact that you take things and, you know, put your focus on them, I just kind of step back. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I think mine, well, thank you for that, Red. I appreciate that. I appreciate that you appreciate that about me. I think mine kind of dovetails with that in terms of how we creatively complement one another, because I think my first thing that I like about working with you is that you're an ideas-driven mind. Like, it's all about big ideas and the next idea and a new idea. Like, when we were driving home last night, carpooling back to our homes, and we were just spitballing about kind of plot points in some narrative thing that would be cool to do, you threw out a specific idea, and I was like, I thought that's a good idea. My question was, did you just come up with that? And you were like, yeah, I looked out the window and I saw that, and then I thought about this, and then I said this, and it was just an idea. And I was like, that's pretty amazing. You know, so I appreciate that the pressure is a little bit off. If I can say, all right, this is the structure of something, and then if we only had that thing to fit into the structure, like here's a beautiful seat for a race car. If there was like something that could just sit in that, or I don't, you know, it just kind of fits. So it kind of takes the pressure off me, because I've in that particular sense. So I appreciate that. I also think this is more personality. Maybe this kind of dovetails with kind of business stuff, but I appreciate the fact. And I'm in dangerous territory saying this.
No.
From an ego perspective. I don't want to stroke your ego too much, but I'll just come out and say it, and then I'll backtrack a whole bunch afterwards.
Okay.
That you're usually right about everything. Oh, I'm just going to say it.
All right, okay.
Like,
I'm going to write that down.
You're right about a lot of stuff. Like, when in doubt, he's probably right about it. And it's not... And I'm not really talking about like creative decisions where it's like really subjective and it's just like, do you like this brush stroke or not? It's more like...
On that painting we did together.
I'm talking more along the lines of like facts and decisions, and like if you actually have to think something through or to kind of like have some sort of applied wisdom, I'm happy to defer. Or if like, I don't know, I would just defer to you, and then I would be pretty confident that you're gonna say the right thing, or have the right opinion, or enough of it that then I can just make the last percentage points come together and make sense. So I feel like that frees me up. I feel like I'm freed up to be wrong about a lot of things, and there's a lot of fun in that. And you even see that in Good Mythical Morning, or in Good Mythical More. If you ever see a cut in Good Mythical More, it's because I get way too loose, because I just feel like I can say anything I want. We can just fix it later somehow, or you'll nip it in the bud, kind of a thing. So I enjoy that. I enjoy the freedom of, it's kind of like having a net, so to speak.
Rhett the net.
Did that make things awkward enough, Hannah? Are you happy with that?
Well, we also have to say what we appreciate about favorite part about working with Stevie. And I think for me, that's pretty easy. It's the fact that
And I guess we need to qualify who Stevie is. Stevie is our psychic advisor.
That's right.
And no, she's what is she? Head of production.
What
and
is
development.
She?
What is this girl?
And I mean, she's a lot more than that too. I mean, that's her title, but she's been very instrumental in the growth of our team, in our business. And I think that one of the reasons why is because she cares, you know. And I think that's my favorite thing about her is that she will lose sleep over something that isn't right about something we're doing.
Yeah, like it's
and that's very difficult to get somebody
as if it's her content right. In a good way.
Yeah, because so you know, most that. People, you know, when I worked for Black and Veatch back in the day, I didn't care. I didn't know who Black or Veatch were, and I didn't care about them. Or
are you sure it wasn't Black and Veatch?
And it was Black like, and Veatch.
It's like a dish.
It was
that you
on
would eat?
All the checks. I read the checks a lot. But I didn't lose sleep when something wasn't going right at work, and I realized that's a different scenario. It was a big company, but she cares, and she really cares, and she gets legitimately upset when there's something that's not right.
Sometimes I call her at 3 a.m. to make sure she's losing sleep about stuff, and she's not. I'm making you right now lose sleep, and that makes me feel better.
And we've had to actually, you know,
fire her a few times.
we've had to say, you know, like, you know, we got to get you, you know, we got to get you some help on some of this stuff so you don't, because she has a tendency to just take on so many different things.
Well, I mean, she supervises a team, which we said is a great team. We're not going to brown nose Stevie anymore or our team, but I think that we're very appreciative.
Yes.
To her and to everybody's work. All right, so let's move on to another question here. Joe Beretta.
Hey, Rhett and Link, it's me, Joe Beretta, the secret former third member of Rhett and Link. Remember when you killed me by drowning me in the pond in the remote area of your North Carolina property? If I recall, it was just as success was starting to rear its ugly head. I'm pretty sure I saw dollar signs in your eyes as darkness ushered me into my watery grave. Good times. Anyways, we all know that you guys are best buds, but I want you to regale us with the stories of when you were truly mad at one another. What happened? How did you handle it? And how did you make up? Cool. Thanks, guys. I will be haunting your kin for an eternity.
Okay. Yeah. So, all right. It's out. We murdered Joe Beretta.
We did. And he's back.
And he's a ghost. He's now a ghost. But he asked a good question about, he wants to get us to dish the dirt on us fighting with each other. And okay, we've racked our brains about this. You know, there's over the years there's been different ways that we fought with each other. I mean, there's when you're kids, you didn't really fight much as kids. You were just like,
no.
So I'm not coming to your sleepover.
And that didn't even happen.
We didn't
even get into arguments as a kid.
No,
as
no,
kids.
No. No, it was, but in college, we would, by the time we were college age, we would fight with each other. We were like rough house, like in high school, but I don't know why it happened in college. It seems like more of a high school thing that we would like wrestle with each other.
Well, I think some explanation is warranted here. I mean, we were watching MMA. Remember that? I mean, that was a lot of it, I recall. We started watching MMA, and then we would like wrestle with each other. Like we would have our dorm room door open, and we would be like
wrestling with each other.
People would walk by, and they'd be like, "What are those guys doing?" And then sometimes Greg or somebody would come over, and they would join in.
Yeah, and you would.
But
do
it
that
was like amateur wrestling.
Yeah, because
it was like 1955 or something.
but there was like it was pent up aggression. And I think it was just, hey, you know, it's kind of like how a big brother punches his little brother. We would just kind of fight with each other because we're in each other's space so much, you just start wrestling a little bit.
I mean, I remember it differently than that. I don't remember it being the same that like we would just be like arguing and then it would turn into wrestling.
No, it wouldn't. I think it was a subconscious thing. Yeah, you just thought it was fun, but you would also do the I'm dead move, yeah. Which is, you know, you weighed how much more than me? 60 pounds more than me.
Easily, yeah.
And then we'd be wrestling and it would, you know, it might start as like a little arm wrestle, but then by the end you would be laying on me full body and you'd be like, I'm dead. And you would just go
that's a move, man. That's
limp.
That's an MMA move. It's so the I'm dead move.
I couldn't get out from underneath the weight of like your 6'7" frame. And you were a skinny guy, but so was I. And it was... But, and that would just, it would be fun up until that point. But then when you would start being like, I'm dead. and I couldn't get out from underneath you, and you would be
you
like,
"You got really mad about
crushing
that?
Me." I would start to get actually mad. Yeah, I would get mad, and you could tell I got mad because I would start
mad.
I would start punching you. I would do things that were like not part of the rule book,
but not like punching me in the face.
No, I wouldn't bite you.
I thought you were just playing.
I wouldn't bite you like a child.
I thought you
child.
Were just playing. I never knew you were actually mad.
But I would. You couldn't see the look on my face. That
I thought
mad.
It was just part of the character.
I was not going into a like. I was not going into like a pro wrestling persona, like the sulking guy with the red face who's like angry. That was not my pro wrestler.
Well,
character.
I'm sorry if
that
I,
was me
I,
being mad.
We haven't done that in a long time. I don't think we ever will.
But there is the
I do
one.
That, I do that to my kids now, though.
I'm dead. You still do that?
Yeah, and they get so mad.
I know they get mad. Don't do it. Yeah.
But
you were doing it that one time, and I remember our dorm room door was open because it was, you know, it's just something that happened spontaneously.
But actually, it was a little bit, the dorm room was cracked. It looked like we might have meant for it to be closed, but it was a little bit open. And somebody walked by and like.
And we were just in boxer shorts.
Yeah, it was totally ridiculous the more I think about this. And I've like got you in this like hold and somebody walks by. And like kind of like cracks the door open.
I remember freezing and I could sense that the door was, well, no, the door
it,
was open.
It was
Grant.
Grant. And he was like, okay. And he just kept walking.
He slowly walked away. And then we didn't realize until like a little bit later, like, oh, that was.
Yeah. I don't know what he thought about that. He may have drawn some conclusions. But
that, I mean, that, I think that's how we fought in college. And then there's like fighting over like, did you take the trash out or did you steal my ice cream out
but
of
I
the
think
freezer?
The thing we've been really open about is the fact that we fight a lot. I mean, we argue a lot and it does get personal and it does get heated. And I think that's a part of any healthy friendship. We don't have to get into that. We talked about that quite a bit in a number of podcasts in the past.
But it's more of a creative thing. And I think we kind of hit on, if I'm going to say anything about it, it's that there's conflict that comes from creative energies colliding in a way that makes good things. But it does get frustrating when you think you've got it figured out and you encounter what feels like opposition, which turns out to be a refining force. And that
like
does
we don't
go
get,
both ways.
We don't get mad at each other like when we go surfing together, for instance. Like it's usually when we're like working on
well,
something.
Well, but hold on. Now that you mentioned that, I remember you getting mad at me when we went surfing because my level of hearing wasn't to your standard. Like you would be like talking to me and I'd be like, what? And you'd be like, I'm not gonna yell. There's like other surfers around.
Yeah, I want
you
to hear. I don't want everyone else to hear. I wasn't mad, I was frustrated.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and that was kind of like-
You're like, what? And I'm like-
I can't hear.
Yeah, but I don't want to like be, I'm having a conversation with you. I don't want it to be a conversation with every surfer out here.
And so I'm the bad guy just because I can't hear. Maybe you're talking quietly and you just don't know it. Why am I the one that's wrong? Or today-
It's not wrong, right or wrong.
What
it's
about today?
Frustrating.
We're walking to lunch and like we're having a conversation and all of a sudden in the middle of the conversation, you're like, slow down.
Well,
why are you walking so fast?
But that's actually something I've been meaning to tell you for a long time. Is like, you walk from point A to point B, you walk so fast.
Well, I was hungry.
No. It's whenever, wherever, you never stroll. You are a beeline. You are right to the next thing. And it's just like, my wife always complains about how I'm walking too fast. She's like, I'm in high heels and your legs are so long, slow down. So I always feel like I'm going really slow for my wife. But whenever I'm walking with you, I feel like I'm like, dadgummit, I am going so fast.
And you should celebrate.
And my legs are so long that I'm having to take these large steps. Like, why is he in such a hurry? So like, we were just having a conversation. I was like, slow down a second.
But you were mad.
No, I wasn't mad. I mean.
And that's where the real conflict comes from. When I'm like, why are you mad? I'm just walking. And you're like, I'm not mad. And I'm like, well, you sound mad. And it's like, I'm just talking. I'm like, well, why you gotta sound so mad when you're just talking? And so then we have an argument about how we're having an argument, like an old married couple.
Because you want me to say like, could you please slow down a little bit? You're not gonna respond to that. You've made it very clear over the past 35 years or however long we've known each other, that you will not respond to, could you just slow down a little bit?
But we fight because, again, like I'm backtracking from my compliment earlier that it's like
you're backtracking.
You're right about a lot of things. Yes, I was walking fast. But it's like the line in The Big Lebowski, and I've told you this before, where The Big Lebowski tells Walter, he's like, you're not wrong, Walter. You're just an you're not an And I'll go on record and say that. But we fight because I will interpret what you're saying as if you are an a-hole. And I'll say, like, why are you mad about me walking fast? Why is it, why am, and I think I said this today, I'm like, why is my speed the thing that's wrong? Why can't it be your speed that's wrong in the way that you said it? And so, like, I'll start harping on, like, how you said something, and then you'll harp on the truth of what you said.
Yeah, because I guess.
And it's like a conversation that's missing each other, well, and that's conflict.
Because the first thing that comes to mind when you ask that question, why is it that your speed is wrong and my speed is right, is because, and this is how my brain works. I think because I feel like I have a barometer for my speed based on my interactions with everyone else on the planet, including my wife. And so I think to myself, I know that I walk faster than the average person. So Link definitely is walking too fast. Therefore, I need to say something to him about it.
It's funny that when we were deciding what order we were going to answer these questions in, we were like, we don't have anything about fights. And then we just came up with two of them because we know that we fight on a weekly basis.
We do it all the time.
And it doesn't matter. You know, I think that's the point, is that we're not actually, like, this seems pretty heated. Just for the record, if you're concerned out there, there's absolutely.
I'll go ahead and tell you right now. Every 13 to 17 year old person listening right now is concerned and thinks that was a big fight. I have learned that through YouTube comments.
And you know what I'm thinking?
To such a degree.
And as we've been talking about this fight, I've been thinking, man, we're really onto something. This is great. Like, I love talking about this. And I think it's hilarious.
And sorry to generalize, you 13 to 17 year olds. Most of you thought that was a fight, and not all of you.
And sorry to kill you back in the day, Joe Beretta.
Yeah.
But if you want to see as like the cusp or the beginning of an actual fight in a video, like a for reals fight, that does exist.
What is the name of that video?
Killing Rhett's Beard.
Yeah, it's called Killing Rhett's Beard. It's when Link shaved my beard on an episode of Good Mythical Morning. At the end, the wheel lands on a black spot. We had a secret spot at the time, and if it landed on that spot, we had to do something bad to each other. And
that was a surprise to us.
Surprise, and that one was slap each other, and we slapped each other
simultaneously,
and I thought that you slapped me too hard, and so I immediately slapped you back. But I had kind of a, like, it was kind of a, like, come on, like, I was mad, but I was still kind of smiling. But as soon as I did that,
don't lie, you were smiling to cover up the fact that you were mad.
Oh no, I was mad. I was totally mad. But I was, in my mind, I was thinking, I'm gonna hit you again to, like, make it even. But all that did was that just you slapped me back, and we hit each other pretty hard, no punching, and it immediately stops and goes dun 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 dun, whatever, yeah, however it used to end back in the day. There was no Good Mythical War, but we sat there and argued with each other, yelled at each other for a good 5 minutes after that.
While Jason sat there, like 6 feet away.
Jason was stuck in a room with us for 2 years. He just sat there for a lot of just, you know, a lot of arguments.
And that explains why he doesn't work for us anymore, by his own volition. He's, you know, he's doing great things.
He's doing exactly what he wants to do, not listening to us bicker.
But yeah, you can see the fire in our eyes. But watching it back, like, watched it back today, and I'm like, you know what? I love the comedic timing of that. Like,
it's funny, yeah.
You could not have.
People love it.
Could not have made it.
It was worth it.
We couldn't have planned it more perfectly, the way that it, like, the timing of it escalated so perfectly.
Because people thought they were really mad at each other.
Because we were.
So that was a legit mad at each other, Joe, and we did reconcile. We always do. Let's move right along.
Let's get to a deep question.
This is Shay Carl Butler recording a voice memo in his garage for the Ear Biscuits podcast.
Yes.
Download it for free on iTunes with Rhett and Link.
All right.
So I have been asked to ask a question to the Ask Meisters themselves. And I feel like this is supposed to be a semi-serious question, right? question mark. We're not looking for pirates versus ninjas here. Am I correct?
Correct.
I assume so. So here we go. If he does, or she, or it, or whatever it is out there that is bigger than us, and that created us, and hopefully loves us and cares for us, if that thing exists, and in the next 20 years, there's technology that also exists that makes it possible for us to transcend death as we know it, to literally overcome the problem that our species has faced for its entire existence. We don't die anymore because robots go into our bodies and our consciousness is that big word that is us inside our bodies, is able to live forever inside these robots that we create. Can both of those things exist, that and God? And if so, what does God think about that? Does he want us to put robots in our body, or does he not want to? That's my question to Rhett and Link. All right, thanks. I'm Shay Carl. Follow me on Twitter. It's at Shay Carl, and then you can watch my fun family vlogs at youtube.com/shaytards. Okay, guys, looking forward to your answer. Bye-bye.
You're kidding me. I love who else can go from such an intricate question, which seems like it was kind of like off the top of his head still, which is kind of crazy, to like a
self-promo.
Self-promo so quickly.
Well, it's interesting that it sounds as if he asked that question from the gates of heaven. But I think it was his garage that he asked the question.
I think he was on stage at the Mormon Tabernacle. I'm just saying.
There was a lot of epic echo.
Epic.
Okay, so, you know, this question. He called us the Ask Meisters. I think the implication there is that we've asked a lot of difficult questions here at this table, including Touche. So Touche, we will.
Yeah, we grilled him for 2 hours.
We will receive a difficult question from Shay.
Yeah, that one's okay. So, wow.
It was a long question.
It was.
There's a lot to it. But I think that, okay, so to summarize the question, the question is, if we're able to take human consciousness and put it onto or into a robot, let's just say into a hard drive, you know, to get it to leave the human body, can that scenario and God exist at the same time? And if so, what does God think about that?
So it's basically like if that movie Transcendence, where Johnny Depp uploaded himself to a computer and then to the internet, if that were possible, what would that mean? What would be the implications, and what would God think about that?
First of all,
as a movie, it wasn't the best movie ever.
It was. I watched that movie on the plane, and it was the audio was real bad, and I could hear a little bit of the movie that the person was watching next to me because there was like a short in the headphones. Why does that always happen on a plane?
No, that was Johnny Depp coming into you.
But I'm not trying to dodge this question, so let's answer it. Interestingly, this raises another question, which is kind of what Shay's getting at, I think. And that is, let's just say, if we are able to take human consciousness and we are able to implant that onto a robot.
Like a hard drive. Basically.
There's a computer, there's a hard drive on a robot. But let's just say that we also have the technology to create a robot that physically looks like a person. And let's just make this personal. Let's say that we're able to figure out how to get your consciousness onto a robot that looks exactly like you. Like, it's such a good recreation that I can't even tell the difference physically between you and this robot.
Well, first of all, lucky robot. second thing is, well, I'm not dead yet. Let's just say
that's kind of irrelevant in one sense, I think.
No, I'm just saying that I would feel I feel like that's not me anymore. But let's say I am dead.
Well, but let me finish the full scenario. And let's say that we get to a point technology-wise that I am able to take, or scientists, whoever, are able to take your consciousness in your brain and implant it onto that you that looks exactly like you.
Mm-hmm.
So not only does it look like you, but whatever consciousness that you have in your brain goes into this. And then I, being your best friend for most of your life, am able to interact with that second link. Your wife is able to interact with that second link. And after spending a certain amount of time with Second Link, I cannot tell a significant, or I can't tell any difference between link number one and link number two. And your wife cannot tell any discernible difference between link number one and link number two.
Then I think it, so much so that you just start calling it Link.
I could just call it Link.
Okay, yes.
The implication would be that your consciousness, everything that is you, was something that was biological slash electrical, right? It was completely contained in the material world, and it was able to transfer over to another being, another robot. That would raise a lot of interesting questions.
That's
right?
A big if, but let's say yes, that happened.
Well, but let's say that, okay, but the other scenario is, we transfer that consciousness over to link number two, and during my interactions with link number two, I think to myself, you know what? He seems to have the right answers to some of my questions, and he seems to remember some of the things that we did, but
he's walking slower.
He seems soulless. There seems to be something missing, or if Christy were to say there seems to be something missing, then maybe what that thing that is missing would be what people would call a spirit or a soul. But let's just say, for instance, because I think Shay's question is, what if it did transfer perfectly? Could that scenario exist? Like, Christy can't tell a difference. I can't tell a difference. It seems like the full link has transferred.
But I could tell a difference. I feel like I would tell a difference. Like, if I weren't dead yet, and be like, don't interact with that link number two, I'm over here, man.
But that link number two would feel exactly the same way as link number one, or presumably.
If link number two was like in a computer monitor and he wasn't in the body yet, he'd want to get out.
He would have theoretically, if there was a perfect transfer.
He'd be mad if he wasn't.
If there was a perfect transfer, then he would have
the
same sense of self that link number one had. And what if he did? Well, and what if he did?
Well, first, I feel a desire to say that wouldn't happen. But
you don't believe that it's possible.
I'm just saying, on an even just an emotional level, if I were to just isolate my emotional reaction to that right now, that I don't want it to be true on emotionally.
You're making it personal, but I guess I made it personal. What if it was somebody you didn't know? What if it was a stranger?
But I think if it's a perfect simulation, is that not a statement about God or spirituality at all? It's just a statement about technology.
I'll tell you. I mean, if I don't know if that who's to say that we would even have the technology to even entertain this question, although there are people like, you know, the futurist or Ray Kurzweil, whatever his name is, who basically says, oh, this is going to happen in 2045, which presumably is within our lifetime. I think that it would have implications, right? Because if that were to happen, if you were able to take a whole of a person and put them on a hard drive, then kind of what you're saying is that if you can take a quote-unquote soul and put it on a hard drive, then it probably can't pass into another dimension. It can't go to heaven or whatever, you know? So I think it would have some implications in terms of what people think about the world, but I don't necessarily think that it would have implications about God in particular. And to answer Shay's question, can God exist and that scenario exist at the same time? I don't see why not. But it would definitely have some implications about the way we think about the spirit, soul, body, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I have to make some adjustments. Yeah, it's interesting because I just don't know how I would feel, because I keep going to back to how I would feel, which is not the operative question here, but I So to put that aside for a second, I do think I know this. I'd like for somebody to pursue it. Like, oh, I'm not saying outlaw it.
Well, that's controversial.
I'm saying go for it, scientist.
Well,
because what all we're going to do is learn. I mean, don't, as long as that doesn't mean you're going to suck the life out, you're going to kill somebody in order to throw them on a hard drive. As long as you're not doing that, as long as you're not hurting anybody, I'm saying, what are we afraid of?
I agree with you.
What are we afraid of finding out? Let's see what we can, let's see what happens,
well,
man.
Well, I would like to think that I am open-minded enough to have my worldview be adjusted by a discovery like that. I mean, I think anyone who would say that I'm not willing to follow that result wherever it might lead is just saying I don't want to hear something that's contrary to what I already think. So if somebody-
But it could also confirm what you already think.
It could.
You know?
It could.
So what are you afraid of? You know, not you personally, but-
Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid
that's
of-
That's kind of how, that's how of, I feel
yeah,
about
right.
it.
Yeah, right. I'm completely on the same page. Now, do I think I that they're going to be able to do that in
I feel
our
weird
lifetime?
About myself being digitally cloned perfectly to the point where I'm not special anymore. That wigs me out. But do it to somebody else and tell me what happens. I'm very curious about that. So go for it.
I mean,
Shay. I guess Shay's doing this out in Idaho.
Yeah,
I think
this,
it's what,
this is why he moved back to Idaho.
He's freaking out there in Idaho.
That's why his garage, where he asked this question, sounds massive. It's probably a massive
lab.
It's
full
lab,
of freaking...
Multiple Shays.
Right.
He's growing other Shays. And he wants to know what God thinks about it.
Yeah,
don't... Well, don't ask us. Ask God, Shay.
Oh, man. That was fun, though. I feel like stupid and like I'm wigging out all of a sudden. Thanks for asking that question. I hope that's not how we make other people feel when they're on their beer biscuits. Here's another question. This one goes really deep.
Hey, Rhett. Hey, Link. It's Harley from Epic Mealtime. I sure as hell can't be the only person that wants to know the answer to this question. Here it is. Have you ever seen each other's penis? When?
Oh, gosh.
Why? Why not? Have you ever bathed together?
Oh, man.
Wow, he went for it, didn't he?
I wrote that question for him.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
No, I didn't. Man, Harley is talk about comedic timing. That was
he's
masterful
got it.
Delivery.
Well, I'll just go ahead and say, as you can probably already tell by the fact that this question was included, we did not rule out any questions. If you sent a question in, via audio, we let you ask it. Harley asked about whether or not we had seen each other's penis and what, when, why, and why not. The answer is yes. Let me just start by saying that. and let me qualify that answer by saying that if you're best friends with somebody for as long as we've been best friends and you don't at least accidentally see the other guy's penis at least a dozen times, then there's probably something wrong. So,
but it's like a fleeting. It's like a frame of a movie.
I've probably seen your penis a dozen times, but I've probably seen it for a total of definitely less than 12 seconds because I've never dwelt upon it. I mean, it's been a like, whoop, there it is. That was an act, you know.
Whoop, there it is.
We've been in hot tubs with naked older men in the middle of the desert, like the hot springs out in Death Valley. We've done that 2 years in a row. We've skinny dipped in the with our good friend Mike up in the top of a mountain in Southern California, up in the Sequoia National Forest.
The water was cold, and we laid out on hot rocks like reptiles for like 30 minutes and went to sleep.
We skinny dipped
fully naked
in high school. We skinny dipped in the
Keith Hills Pond
in the Cape Fear River. Yes, I've seen your penis. You've seen my penis.
There was a whole group of people involved.
We don't make a big deal about it. It's just two guys that have happened to be naked at the same time a number of times. But like I said, I've never made an effort to see it.
Now, I will say that I have never seen your penis. I've looked and I just can't spot it. Totally true. Mm.
I'm going to refrain from making any jokes, man, or any comebacks at all.
I knew I was going to say that like 5 minutes ago. I was just waiting for you to shut up so I could say that stupid joke. I remember a specific instance, though. This is a middle school experience, you know, when like everything's awkward. You probably don't, tell me if you remember this. It was the first time that like, you would go to the beach with your family every year, but it was the first time like, you were invited me and like, I went to the beach with you and your family. And what beach was it? Topsail? You would go there every year and it was like
Summerwinds, Emerald Isle.
Emerald Isle, Summerwinds condos. And I remember one night, like you had a room, it had two single beds in it. So we were sitting on the edge of our single beds, like getting ready to go to sleep. And you know, when you're in middle school, it's like, we're gonna stay up and talk. And so we were just like sitting around, hanging out in our boxers and a t-shirt, and just kind of like talking about middle school crap, like, I don't know, Ninja Turtles or who knows what. And I remember I was talking to you about I don't know, it could have been Ninja Turtles. I don't remember what it was.
It could have been Ninja Turtles.
And I remember at a certain point in the conversation, you were like, dude, your stuff's hanging out. And there was like, and it was like extremely embarrassing. I remember.
I don't know why it was, I mean.
It was just, I was like, oh, I got to put on some pants or something. Because there's like, you know, there's not like a zipper on the boxers and it's not a big deal or anything.
I was just looking out for you. I wasn't embarrassed.
Yeah, it was just a weird thing. But it's like one of those things when you're, I don't know, 12 years old. And I was like, oh, I wonder if he's still going to be my friend after. I had my junk hanging out of my boxers. You know, I put it away and I kept talking about Ninja Turtles after I put my Ninja Turtle up.
Right.
But
well, you know, the interesting thing, this is actually making
Hero in a half shell.
This is making me remember, and I think a lot of guys do this. In college, we went through this phase, like probably junior year, because we had the apartment with Tim and Greg, and you kind of go through this phase where you're just like, if I need to go from
I don't know what you're about to say.
If I need to go from the shower to my bedroom, I'm just going to walk through the house naked. And I don't care which of my roommates sees me.
Right.
All four of us did that.
Yeah.
And we were just like, we don't care. And there's almost this certain sense of freedom and like adulthood that you kind of feel in that part of that time
in
your
life. It's like getting over it. It's like,
because I remember how timid I was in high school to be like, oh, I'm in the locker room. I don't want anybody to see me. I'm really scared about this. But then all of a sudden you start growing out of that and you're like, oh, I understand why all the professors in college are in the locker rooms naked, because they don't care, because they're over it.
Yeah, like when you put your butt cheeks on their back, they don't even flinch or get up or say anything or grunt, nothing.
And you kind of revel in that for a few years. And so, I mean, again, there was never any purposeful eye contact with your nether regions. And I would assume that you feel the same way.
Yes.
But I would see that you were naked. So it would be like penis in the periphery. It's sort of this sort of probably a good way to describe it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which could be the name of our next album.
Yeah, or at least like a side band.
Is that a pun? I don't know. I actually don't know how that's a pun.
Well, side, I don't know. Well, okay, so Harley, thanks for that question. Hopefully have we ever bathed together? No, I don't believe so. We did just recently make a video where I played a guinea pig and Link played a little girl and we were bathing together.
But it was green screen bath.
Yeah, right. We were fully clothed. We have one last question. This one is a secret question, it says.
All right, here it goes.
Hey, I'm Alex.
I'm Eddie.
And I'm Chase.
And I'm Kevin.
And we work for you guys literally every single day. And we just had a quick question. We're wondering when we were going to get paid.
Okay, guys.
Well, it's going to be a lot longer now that you asked that question.
Yeah, we'll get back to you on that one. Okay. Well, the pranksters trying to get in on the
podcast. Yeah, that's what happens when they have access to SD cards.
High quality, highest quality audio of
recorded, of probably recorded right here at the round table of dim lighting.
Yeah, we're not paying them.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's it. This was fun. I think we could do another round of this next time. This is a tradition that can continue. I just don't want the questions to get tougher and tougher, so maybe it won't continue.
Well, we may have to start leaving some out, but we did make every effort to answer every question to the best of our ability. Thanks to everybody who took the time to ask these questions, and thanks for the times that you guys were guests here on Ear Biscuits and listened to us ask you question after question as we teamed up on you. And thanks for taking the time. And thanks for taking the time to listen to Ear Biscuits. If you know, this is one of your first ones, you just got in, I don't know how many episodes,
a lot
of episodes back, Ear Biscuits season one and season two. We've had some incredible conversations with some incredible people. I know that I have learned a lot.
Even if you don't think you want to listen to one based on the description, now you got to go back and find ones. And hey, we were there, and I think you'll find new things about guests that you didn't think you wanted to listen to. So fill in the gap of us not having new Ear Biscuits for you for a while, and try to keep us a part of your routine. We do appreciate you being your mythical best. Tweet at us, hashtag Ear Biscuits. Let us know what you thought of this conversation. What stood out to you, if there was anything that was helpful.
And feel free to tweet at any one of these individuals who asked us the question, thanking them for their question on Ear Biscuits.
Yeah, thanks for being a loyal listener and for leaving a review on iTunes. There's a part of me that doesn't want to take a break because I enjoy the conversations that we have with the guests that we have here at the round table. And, you know, it's kind of a forced, relational rejuvenation for us. I feel like it's a good thing for us to have these type of conversations, mm-hmm. Where we reminisce, we process things. A lot of people who are guests end up saying things at the end of our conversation or after we stop recording that's like, yeah, some people say, wow, it felt like therapy, and that's kind of funny but kind of true too, I guess, depending on some of the questions we ask. But the thing that I enjoy people to say is when it's like, wow, you helped me put things together and gain a perspective on my own life or my own career.
People verbally process things on
the
show.
Yeah, so I appreciate the way that's something that, A, we get to share in that processing with people and experience that as they go back through it.
And if there were 8 days in a week, we would continue to do it indefinitely.
But the other half is just when it's the two of us, there's kind of, we experience that too. I think it's nice to think back and to process why things work so well for us and what's going on in our friendship and creative collaboration and everything. So, I'm in the break. I'm going to be glad to be focusing on these other creative endeavors, but I'm going to miss this until we get back into it. So hang in there, guys. Listen back through them. And that's all I got to say. I'm thankful.
Yes, very, very grateful to the Ear Biscuiteers.
And I'm going to go take a bath by myself.
Okay, please do that.